Well, now I have to present to you our ways of doing things, the Bulgarian way. It's not very original, actually, because it's like all the other ways. We have penalized in this article there all the forms of trafficking in human beings, and they correspond to the international agreements that we are party to, and in perfect correspondence and harmony with the Palermo Protocol, which means that we have criminalized even what we would call consensual or voluntary trafficking. It means that if a lady is exploited sexually, even with her consent, the trafficker is supposed to carry criminal liability. He is criminally responsible. One of the colleagues, I think the beautiful lady from Spain, showed you that most of the cases in human trafficking are related to sexual exploitation, about 70%. According to the data presented to you by Europol, in my understanding, in my country, trafficking in human beings that is related to sexual exploitation, I would call it prostitution, if you don't mind, about 80 to 85% are related to sexual exploitation. Of course, there are three levels of sexual exploitation. According to us, it's low-level prostitution, middle-level and high-level. What usually law enforcement does in most of the countries is go after low-level prostitution and high-level and middle-level sexual exploitation. And you never go after high-level sexual exploitation. I mean that I'll try to relate to your story that concerns the famous Aristotle Onassis. As you know, he was a Greek tycoon that was boyfriend to the divine Maria Callas and husband to Jacqueline Kennedy. He was a ladies' man, which means he attracted ladies. And during the early 50s, he was friend with the then king of Egypt. I think he was Farouk or something. Egypt was a kingdom before Nasser came to power, and he also liked ladies. So this King Farouk, I'm sorry if I forgot the name, but the king of Egypt then, read a paper, an article in one of the American papers, and saw a photograph of one of their famous actresses. I will not cite her name. And he cut her picture from the paper with the scissors and sent a letter to Onassis that I have read in Onassis' biography, and wrote under her photograph, sent her to me. So Onassis bought the ticket and sent her to him. And she received lots of money. But I don't think it's a typical case of human trafficking, voluntary, but I don't think that anyone would have prosecuted him then. No one prosecuted him then, and no one prosecutes him now. So what we normally would do is go after low-profile prostitution. Under this, I understand the ones that work on in open spaces, around the highways and in simple surroundings. The high-profile prostitutes or ladies of, that sell their love work in clubs, more or less, and the high-level prostitutes, which are Miss World, Miss Sophia, Miss so-and-so, they are just called. Of course, then you have to have an in-between between the client and the lady that sells her services. And I don't know why the in-between is considered the main villain. Under our legislation, we go after the client as well. It's the same model in Sweden. If the client knows that the lady is exploited in some way, that she has to pay part of her money to someone else, then he's also a party and can be prosecuted criminally. That's 3 or 4 years ago we had this law, but I'm not aware of a single instance of a client being sentenced. Usually the clients are men that go after ladies, but we have also young boys, and we have ladies that order men as well. They always order young men. But we have never had a case, a criminal case, in which such a case has been prosecuted. This should be that way. Well, I'm supposed to speak about our financial investigation unit. I'm not part of that unit. But our financial investigation unit is like just all the other units throughout Europe. It's not much different. Well, here are some geopolitical and macroeconomical factors that to some extent can be of influence. Of course, they influence mostly the human trafficking, and the trafficking of smugglers, of migrants, I mean, and we differentiate, as most probably all of you, we differentiate migrant smuggling and THB. In migrant smuggling, you do not aim to exploit them. You just aim to transport them from one place to another. It's basically not very much different, but exploitation is not included in migrant smuggling. Well, our financial investigation unit was established in 1998 and it moved. And here, there are its particulars, what it does, how it does, and so on. We have 35 reporting entities, which of course include the banks, the insurance companies, even the notaries, and they have those obligations that have all the such categories of entities throughout Europe and maybe throughout the world. These are the applicable laws. Financial institution is within the State Agency of National Security. Our State Agency for National Security is what you would call intelligence or counterintelligence, and it's there. It was within the Ministry of Finance. Now, this law is rather new. It is from 1 or 2 months ago, and they are now working on what would be the regulations to implement it. But basically, when I spoke to colleagues from the unit, they say that this law is better than the other law, and much wider in scope, and much more concrete, actually. Well, you read this, there is nothing to say about it, but some figures, if you will allow me. And speaking of figures, well, I would like to quote Mark Twain, who said there are three kinds of lies, or four kinds, I forgot. The first is simple lies, well, it's nothing. Second one is high level is lies, and the highest level is statistics. That's what he called extreme lies. So when you go for statistics, you should always have in mind that they could never be complete. According to the statistics that I possess, and they are worked by the Bulgarian National Bank and other entities, I'm speaking of my country, of course. Only about 5 of the suspicious transactions reports are connected or related to THB. And out of these suspicious STRs, all the cases in which they have been active, never the banking system was used. They used the money remittance services. And of course, often they do not use any money remittance services. Because, for example, if a Bulgarian girl is trafficked, let's say, to Netherlands, which is often the case, and there she works, there. What do they call them? I forgot, they work behind screen or something like that. It's normal practice in Netherlands, and I go with it. And well, if such a girl works and wants to send her money through her pimp or whatever, they would not use the banking system, they would use all, even these MoneyGram and Western Union, they would use another guy who will come to the country. They often travel, it's not a problem. They don't carry such huge quantities of money. They don't even have to carry the money. They can buy an expensive car and they sell it in Bulgaria or sell it anywhere. And this is also, they often don't use even what we would call a mule. They transport, they'll come in an expensive Mercedes and they'll sell it. And this Mercedes can be driven by anyone. So I wouldn't say that our statistics reflects the objective reality, but it is statistics anyway. You can't go without statistics. What does our financial investigation unit do here? Receive, stores, analyzes and so on. And this is what all the investigations at the financial investigation units do everywhere. I don't think they do anything else. It's much actually, it's not a big service. It comprises about 40 to 50 people and it's stationed in Sofia. They have only a central office. They don't have regional branches. My country is not very big, actually. We do not have a federal structure so far. They have a wide power of international information exchange with other FIUs. So if you have a case in your country which is related to my country, you can go for the, it's not, now it's called the European Order of Investigation because it's the new instrument. Or you can go directly to your financial unit and it will contact our financial unit. And in this interaction, they are supposed to exchange information when it's related to whatever transfers they can get their hand and eyes on. Well, they are members of the Egmont Group. Of these organizations, according to me, the most important is the Egmont Group. It is a group in which financial units throughout the world participate, so they can exchange information throughout the world, with members, of course. The rest are not so important, according to me. All your financial units are members of the Egmont Group. That's by definition. None is left out. And they exchange information. I've received information through them. Of course, it cannot be used directly in court. It's not a proof, and I suppose it's not a proof, evidence collected even in your systems. You should collect the evidence as per your procedural codes, whatever they are. We do not use their information, in my country at least, I don't know how it's in yours, as evidence in a case. For example, then we'll have to go for, if we have bank transactions, we'll have to open the bank secrecy through a court or through the Supreme Prosecutor in certain cases which relate to money laundering. Well, that's how they share their information. I think it's quite clear, spontaneous. Well, when in their analysis they, for example, have received a suspicious STR and they've concluded that there is some information or whatever, I guess the Spanish colleagues had a hit that this is connected one way or another to a crime. And then they are supposed to share this information, for example, with the prosecutor or within their own, which is SANS, as I call, State Agency of National Security, which later on will relate it to the prosecutor's office, to the respective. They can disseminate information when asked. Well, it's actually, dissemination is a rather complex word, but actually it's handling of information, relating to information. They have an old database, in all cases. They have a huge database, because all suspicious, all STRs are recorded one way or another. They can go and open, they can go to the bank. They don't have a software to enter the bank's secrets, but the bank is supposed to handle them, everything that they have. In Italy, I spoke a month ago to an Italian prosecutor in their service, which is, it's called Antimafia, I think, or something like that. The prosecutor, what surprised me, if there is, if he's investigating a crime, prosecuting something, he can go on his own accord, enter into the, he has that necessary software, and it's absolutely legal. He can enter into any bank and follow the trace of the money the way he likes. Of course, it should be connected one way or another to a crime. He cannot do this for fun's sake or for whatever. But we don't, our prosecutors do not have such a possibility, and I am not aware of any prosecution anywhere else that can do such things. If you are aware, please take the floor. Well, I thought I wouldn't go elaborating to the Egmont principles because I do not know them very well, but the main thing is that they're supposed to exchange information, that dissemination of information should be with the consent of the party that has sent the information and such things. Our FIU can do spontaneously dissemination when they have close links to a foreign country. Well, they have close links with all the EU countries. And when requested, they can also send their information. Well, I understand what's the theme of our meeting here, but they don't have any specifics related to trafficking in human beings. They'll do this with any crime. So there is nothing exceptional that can be said. If they can connect the transaction to a crime, they are active. Doesn't matter what is the crime. And it can be even a tax crime, because in certain countries they have these provisions that tax crimes are not to be included in this. They can exchange information on their own accord, regardless of presence of a suspicious transaction report. So they have a free hand. Of course, I don't know if you have had contacts with your financial investigation units in your countries, but part of their job is to educate the subjects, the reporting parties, how they should report, what are the factors that determine a transaction as suspicious, and so on. And they do this added by other supervisional bodies, such as the Bulgarian National Bank, the Revenue Service, and so on, which have their own control services. A compliance check is, they check the reporting entity on whether they have organized themselves so that they can report the suspicious transaction, and it's their power is discretional. They are the ones to judge whether this reporting entity is up to the standards, and they can initiate the proceedings, for example, because they are usually licensed, to take away the license from this entity. This I already told you. This also, I'm running in front. Now the letter robbery, of course, it's not an instrument of the EU anymore, but there are other parties, and it's so it's much the same actually. Letter robbery is very much the same. It differentiates, of course, but it's not substantially different. The European order of investigation. Well, in my country we know only MoneyGram and Western Union. The head offices for our country are in, I think MoneyGram had its office here even in Vienna, but now both the head offices are in Bucharest. So the ones responsible for my country, these offices, are not in my country, but they have their brokers throughout the country. And that's what they have observed. In this respect. Of course, you are aware of the Havala type of transfers. Just in two words, we don't have them in our country. We know what that is, but we have not had a single criminal case regarding a Havala type of transaction. I suppose they have them in Sweden, definitely. And I don't know if anyone has had any success with Havala type transfers. I'm not aware of cases when someone has been sentenced for participating in a Havala type transaction. I'm even not certain that they're illegal, if you ask me. What's illegal about Havala? Illegal if the transfer is done with the knowledge that it's connected to some sort of a crime or not. For example, you have an office in Mogadishu, which is the most dangerous country in the world, most probably now. Maybe after Yemen. And you have an office in, let's say, in Stockholm. Of course, the money would go from Stockholm to Mogadishu and not vice versa. It could be vice versa. And what's illegal about it? What would be the law with which you attack this Havala type of transaction? I don't know. Well, if you can connect it to a crime, definitely. But if it's just a transaction, what? When you connect something to a crime, you can always go after it. Actually, I, after more than 30 years of practice with criminal law, and have not yet turned into a criminal, think that you should be wise before imposing restrictions on your citizens. I mean, turning something into a crime. Let's remember that the start of organized crime throughout the world began when the prohibition law was passed in the United States between the two wars. And no one had heard of organized crime before that. And due to the fact that the use of alcohol was criminalized, all these groups appeared, Al Capone and so on, or Al Capones. And I wonder, because I know that I've read that Mr. Trump has never drunk anything but Coca-Cola. Well, if making America great again means that they'll impose prohibition, what would happen? Of course, the same thing. And after the long prohibition was, they took it off the agenda, then all these groups turned to narcotics. Actually, if you read the memorandums of the World Health Organization, the healthiest population or not, do you know where it is? Do you have any propositions, suppositions? No, no, I was very much surprised. It's Afghanistan. There lives the healthiest people on earth. And Afghanistan is, this territory is one of the biggest producers of poppies, from which heroin is produced. So, when prohibition was imposed, it was stated that people using alcohol ruined their health, ruined their families and such things. And for example, in Holland, I know that usage of light narcotics is not criminalized. You can buy in a coffee shop and smoke something, and your population is quite healthy, I suppose. Maybe more, not as healthy as in Afghanistan, but excellence has no boundaries. Because I was in Afghanistan. You could buy many years ago. You can buy these things anywhere. You can't buy alcohol because it's against their religion. Well, the money remitters, which, as I told you, are in our country, are these two: Western Union and MoneyGram. Their offices do not execute full control over the agents in Bulgaria. But that I already told you. That doesn't seem important to me, and that's thank you.